Attention Austin guitarist, are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's my friend Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the very best job, but he has the fastest service and the best prices in town. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Gang, whether it's acoustic or electric, Jason is your guy. Get your guitars fixed. Hey, gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you, my friend, want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives that are available on the Podbean app. If you follow us on the Podbean app, we have every single show ever released on that platform. You'll also get all of your favorite shows like Fresh Air, WTF with Mark Maron, ID10T, the Michelle Obama podcast. All podcasts available there, and you can also access over 1,000 How Did I Get Here episodes. So download the Podbean app from your app store and start listening today. Let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Bowdy.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week, whatever it is you did this week. It's been a hell of a week this week, man. It's been insane. But you know what? It's coming up next week, Thanksgiving. And I've got a lot to be thankful for, you know? We all do, actually, in some way. I know there's probably a lot to be pissed off about, but there's a lot to be thankful for. And so I hope you're in that place of gratitude. I sound like a New Age podcast. And also, How Did I Get Here has changed its format. This is now a New Age podcast. But no, I hope you're in a place of gratitude and that you're entering this season, like all this holiday season. There's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of stress involved with it, a lot of loneliness involved with it. A lot of too many people stuff involved with it. All kinds of things. All kinds of things happen in this holiday season. And it kicks off next week. And so I hope that you're in a good headspace and a place of gratitude and surrounded by people that you love and love you. All right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Wow, that was nice. Hope you guys are having a good week. Basically, that's what I'm saying. And I hope you're in the headspace to go into a holiday scene and go visit your crazy family or have your crazy family come visit you or see your crazy friends or whatever the hell you do on Thanksgiving. Gang, I have a great show for you today. My dear old friend, singer-songwriter Chris Schultz just dropped her debut LP a couple weeks ago called Standard Issue Heart, and she is here to talk all about it. Fantastic record. Produced by Charlie Richards, great, great musician, and he plays guitar and stuff on it. The great Brian Mendez plays drums, and my dear old friend Pally plays bass, who I've played with many different incarnations of bands. Anyway, my dear old friend Chris Schultz, man, this is her debut LP, and it's fucking great. I knew Chris like 20 years ago or so, more than 20 years ago. She was hanging out with Casey Crowley. She was hanging out with Nina Singh and Mark Addison, who were at that time in The Borrowers. Then she became a good friend of mine. She was around when my band Gowdy made our second album, Effects of Madness. In 2001, she lived at the place where we recorded it. So we hung out every single day. Then Chris and I ended up being good friends. She came to tons of gigs of mine. She went to tons of gigs of other songwriters, tons of Casey Crowley gigs, and really, really absorbed all of this music stuff. And anyway, we ended up doing stuff together, like working on different paint crews together in the early 2000s. It was a weird time for both of us. Then she started walking dogs and taking care of dogs, and also at the same time picked up a guitar and decided to start writing her own songs. After just hanging out with all these singer-songwriters, she was always the person in the room that wasn't the singer-songwriter. We talk a lot about that. But now she is. And she fucking is a great songwriter. And Charlie and her and Brian and Pally made a fantastic record. You should check it out. Standard Issue Heart. You can find her at chrisschultzmusic.com. Really, really talented. really amazing. It's funny to see someone, you know, and not know anything about that for so long and be friends with them. And then all of a sudden, there they are. And they're fucking great, which makes me really happy. If you want to see Chris and you live in the Austin area, she's playing tonight, Friday, November 19th at Front Yard Brewing in Spicewood from 5 to 7 p.m. Tomorrow night, November 20th, she'll be at the Cigar Vault in Buda from 7:30 to 9:30. Really, really great talking to her. Great hanging out with her. I know she just did a release show at 1-to-1 Bar with her whole band. But I bet these shows this weekend are solo acoustic. And I bet really that's the way to see her. Always great talking to my dear friend Chris Schultz. Great, great. And it's great to see her do so well and to come out and make this great record. Congratulations, Chris Schultz. And you guys, please enjoy me and Chris sitting around, chatting it up over Zoom. Let's get down. Man, I'm seeing you for the first time in so long. How are you?
I know, I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm good. I'm good and busy and crazy.
Yeah, man. Dude, this is like, I don't even know where to start with this, except for that Standard Issue Heart, great record. Great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, great Thank songs. You. You're such a great singer. It has such, there's a lot of confidence in your delivery and your performance and a lot of vulnerability in your words, which as a person that's known you for a long time, being so quiet and like everyone else is always, you know, doing all the talking. You're like, oh yeah. And now here's these amazing stories.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
thank you so much.
Yeah. So let's just talk about the record real fast. Then we can get into the backstory of the whole thing. Can I ask you okay. one favor? Cool. Can you
sure.
move your microphone a little bit from your hair? Because it's going... Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Yeah.
It's... Yeah. Sorry.
That's
I have too
okay.
much hair. Yeah.
Chris.
Is that better?
Yeah. That is great.
Okay.
So, cool. So Charlie Richards produced this record. He played on it.
Yeah.
Did a great job. It sounds amazing. And Brian Mendez and Pally played on it. Those are two
yeah.
great dudes, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. Those are the... best guys.
Yeah.
Like, not only the best musicians, but just the coolest humans, you know?
They're yeah.
Yeah, that was important to me to get not only the best, the you know, the best musicians, but they had to be good people.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So,
and, you know,
yeah,
it's,
and they're so much fun.
It's funny because I've thought about this situation and I have this situation with a couple of people where it's difficult for, I like, you did this record with Charlie, and that's kind of different than your normal sort of like last 20 years of people you've kind of been around in studios you've hung around, right? So
yeah,
my
exactly.
question to
yeah.
you is that it would be hard for someone that's known you for a long time as, you know, I mean, an awesome person, but not in there jamming and doing all that stuff. It's difficult that for someone like me or Mark Addison or Casey Crowley, I know you play with Casey and stuff like that, to be able to see you in this light, in this way. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was, it was really important to me because at first, I mean, Casey knew I was writing songs and stuff because she's the one who helped me figure out that I wasn't, you know, that I could actually do it and that I could sing, which I didn't know.
Yeah. And, you're a really good singer, but, man.
Thank you. Thank you. So she knew, but I really didn't tell anybody until I had really kind of just written a bunch of songs and, you know, worked on it a lot. And, I didn't tell anyone until I got my first gig. And then I was like, oh, hey, I'm doing this thing. just because I needed that time to just kind of figure out what I was doing, you know, it all kind of happened really fast. And
I remember when I first saw on social media that you were playing, the first thing that came to mind was, well, if you can't beat them, join them. Because you've been around musicians for the last 20-something years. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I know. And that was the other thing, too. I remember when I posted the first thing, you know, the first song that I sang. I think it was maybe my open mic performance with Casey at the Cactus. And it was my song Spinning, and I posted it, and I was like, I immediately felt like I was going to puke, because I was like thinking of all my friends
and all the shit we talk about people when they leave the room.
I'd be, yeah, that's part of it. I was like, oh God, you know, and suddenly I was like, I felt like I was going to puke thinking of all the people that were going to see that I had, you know,
yeah,
been in the room for, you know, for so many years. And yeah, something like that.
Well, you came.
But then I started.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, so I started posting just like things of me playing in my living room before, you know, right. I think it was after my first gig, I started.
When was, you know, that? When was that first gig? What year was what?
It was 5 months after I started writing songs. It was November 4th, 2017. So yeah.
Shit, that's really not very long ago.
It's not very long ago at all. And so I started posting videos of me playing in my living room, because in my mind I was like thinking of, I was kind of thinking back on, you know, just time with musicians, where it's like so many of my friends are musicians in this town for so long. And I thought, they're going to be afraid to, when I start posting that I'm going to be playing shows, right, they're going to be afraid to, it's like a cringy thing. Like I'm afraid to see what she's doing. And so I kind of posted it, those things to be like, hey guys, it's okay. I don't completely suck.
Right.
You can check it out in the safety of your own home without right. coming to see. And you know, you can cringe in your own home if you don't like it, but you know, I don't know. I just felt like,
well, that's
that, and just changing my own mind about kind of who I was in the situation. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is like, it's not just that you know all these people, it's that you're really a beloved person in that scene. Like, you're literally part of that scene. And then it's like, all of a sudden, like, people are like, oh shit, what if it is terrible? And then it's like, Chris is so nice. Like, what do we do? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there was so much of it that I was kind of, because I'd watch everybody work their butts off for so many years, it was really important to me to kind of, you know, put in the work and do the work before I, you know, I think I told somebody that I didn't want it to be like one of those things where you're the water girl for the basketball team, and then all of a sudden you put on a jersey and you're like, I'm a basketball player now.
Right.
You know,
right.
I didn't want it to be like that. I wanted to put in the work and really have something that I could, you know, be proud of. And I played as many gigs as I could. And I, you know, got up 2 hours early every day so I could practice and write and stuff. And I wanted that to be, I needed to do it in that order, and I needed to put in my time and not have it be like, oh, by the way, I'm doing this now.
Right. You know? Right.
and without putting in the work. So,
right. Yeah. There is like an overly democratized, especially after COVID, where we kind of lived our social lives and like going to shows all were us looking at our phones as some dude in his room or some girl in her room, you know. Hey man, right. I'm playing this song. Like I was doing it, you know what I mean? Just so sad. But But you realize that it's so democratized that you can wake up and the next day, like, be posting along with Paul McCartney. You know what I mean? Like, hey, here's my song too, buddy.
Right.
So, yeah. It's interesting because when I was listening to the record the first time, I was like, there's just a lot of like, well, of course you're good. How could you not be good? It's kind of like, have you ever seen William Harry's Graham?
Yeah,
he's really fucking good. Yeah. How could he not be good? He kind of came up around all these really good people. Like, how could he not be good? You know what I mean? Same thing with Charlie's son, Marlon, and his band, like Shooks. Like, he's amazing. And you're like, well, of course. Yeah. How could he not be amazing? He's, you know, same thing with you. Like, you came up around really great and talented musicians, and you were there through the whole, I'm sure you were there when people were writing songs. You were there, I know. Weren't you there the whole time we made that second Gaudi album? You lived there.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I lived there at the time, yeah.
So, like, you were there for, like, so much creation and so much, like, you watch people ascend, you watch people, you know, fail, and you've had a really good vantage point, you know, of being on the inside, but still being able to watch it objectively. And you've come out like fully formed, which is, it's really awesome. I was talking to Einar about it the other day. I was like, you got to check this out, man. It's like, of course she's awesome. Like, how is she not going to be awesome? But yeah. So, okay. So how did you hook up with Charlie? How did you meet him? Or run into him,
well,
or get him involved.
I mean, we knew we were kind of in the same kind of circles for so many years ago. We didn't really know each other. We never really talked and stuff. But until I don't know how many years ago, we ran into each other at the airport when we both were delayed, and we had this really long conversation. And then we didn't see each other again until probably 2019. And so Casey wanted to show me this other guitar player that was playing at the Saxon, and I showed up, and there was a giant band. There were two or three guitar players, and I wasn't really watching, but I was listening. We were sitting kind of up front, and all of a sudden I heard this baritone guitar, and I looked up, and then it was Charlie, and we kind of made eye contact, and we're like, oh yeah, hey, it's you.
Yeah.
You know? And then he played Lap Steel that night too. And I was just like, how did I not think of him? You know?
Right.
And, so I asked him if he'd play a couple shows with me at the Townsend. And, it was pretty immediately apparent that he was the guy to produce, because he just got my songs. He listens to lyrics, which is so unusual for a guitar player.
Well, he orchestrated, definitely all the guitars are orchestrated in response to the poetry in the melody. You know what I mean? Like, they're, it's very respectful to you as a singer.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he did a great job.
He's great. Yeah.
So how many, so these are just questions I have, and I probably wouldn't normally ask other people, but like, did you have to do a lot of vocal takes? Did you just do like two and that was it? Or was it hard? I mean, did you, when you went in the studio, was that real hard compared to what you had been doing?
Well, you know, like the first, I mean, because it was definitely different. I mean, I'd spent so much time in the studio with other people and watching them.
But there's something about them.
That was normal.
There's like an aural microscope on you when you hear yourself at the same time that you're playing. You're like, why is it? What? You know what I mean?
Exactly. That was definitely, I thought I knew what to expect. And then I went and I did not know what to expect. The first song that I did was a little iffy. It took some time, but once I got the hang of it, it was good. And then once, you know, Charlie started, I think, realizing that I just needed to be completely relaxed. So You know, he would come in and if he could tell when I was getting kind of too intense or something, and he would come in and you know, say something ridiculous and make me laugh, and then the next take would be the take, you know. So
that's great.
He's really good about that.
Were you able to record together, all of you guys, like Pally and Brian Mendez and the whole gang?
Yeah, because we actually started recording in early 2020.
Okay.
We started recording it in early 2020, and we had done all the tracking, and we were at the point of doing, like, I had done all my vocals, and we were doing background vocals and then just little parts and stuff. And the day that they canceled South by Southwest, we were in the studio. It was me and Charlie and Kristen DeWitt, who had come in to do some background vocals and harmony vocals. And that's the day that everything shut down. So we were quite a ways into the record before everything shut down. And then we just kind of sat there with it for a year until everybody was vaccinated and went back in probably April, May. So,
okay. Yeah. Finished it up. I love Brian. He's been on the show actually a couple of times. He's a real...
He's so great. And then he's so funny.
Skyrocket played this event, like this big event, and they had like a film crew at it and all this stuff. And I look over and Brian's in the film crew.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's been doing that. He's been doing that. Oh, I love Brian. He's so great. And you know, I just love the way he plays. I love that he can play anything.
Yeah.
That guy can play any kind of music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I think he's probably...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I think his early influences were pretty heavy rock.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But he can play anything. He can play something really, you know... He can play very sensitively, you know.
Right.
I don't know. I just love the way he plays. Yeah.
So, you're from Kansas?
Yeah, grew up in Topeka.
Topeka, Kansas.
Yeah.
And I read this a story that you posted on Instagram about your twin sister Kirsten, who I know as well.
Yeah.
She did the artwork for the album, and she did a really cool shirt of you and your Chucks and the microphone stand and the whole thing. But that you had written this story about, were you creative writing like this whole time?
Yeah. So I always kind of wrote stories and poems and such. When I was 6 years old and I was at the YMCA where my mom worked, I was a big reader and I always had books with me and stuff. And I was also very active, you know. I was always in the gym at the Y playing basketball, and, the gym was closed and I had read all my books, and I made the mistake of telling my mom's boss that I was bored. And that was the last time I ever said that I was bored in my life. He handed me a piece of paper and a pen, and he was like, you know, and I said, because I said, I read all my books, you know, I don't have anything to read. I read all my books and the gym's closed and I'm bored. And he handed me a piece of paper and a pen. He was like, write your own book, own story. And so I did. And that's how I would pass time. Just writing little stories and about elephants. And
But were these stories somehow like indicative of what was happening inside of you? Like, was there a parallel? Like, was something happening to the elephant that was happening to you at the time? You know what I mean?
Right. I'm sure. I think, well, the first one was about an elephant. And then after that, it was definitely, you know, I wrote it as, you know, fiction, but it was about someone with a twin sister and an older sister who was, you know, 9 years older that would make hamburgers for me. And yeah. You know, it was when you're that young, if you try to fictionalize something, that's all you got is what you are living there. But yeah, there were parallels. But then, you know, as I got older, it was definitely an outlet for me to write little stories and poems and such. But
You were in Topeka, so you guys got like MTV when it came out, did you?
Yeah, we sort of did. We had it. We had cable when it was when there was some kind of deal where you got cable for really, you know, free or cheaply.
Right.
And so we'd have it spot, you know, we'd have it for a year.
Right.
And then it would go away.
Right, right, right.
So yeah, we had, you know, we had MTV. We watched all the videos, but most of my musical, you know, information that I was taking in was, we hung out at a bar with our parents. It was a place called Otto's. From that time, I was probably 4 or 5 until I was 12, 13. And so it was the jukebox at Otto's was the big, you know, the big musical influence. And it had, you know, all that, you know, it had some classic country, but it also had like all this late 70s, early 80s singer songwriters and, you know, and some Fleetwood Mac and things like that.
So you were into sort of what informed the sound that you have now then?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Like you weren't into Culture Club and shit on MTV.
Well, not so much. It was like the jukebox, and then it was my older sister, what she was listening to. She's the best big sister. She was in high school. I was in grade school, and she insisted that if her friends were going to hang out with her, they had to accept Kirsten and I too. So
right.
We were there for all that stuff. And so, you know, she was listening to the Cars and a lot and things like that. So, you know, that kind of stuff got in there too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you don't have like synthesizers and hand claps in your songs.
No, 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 that's not.
I like those that. Things.
I know.
So, so you're a dreamer in Topeka, and were you like, I got to get out of here? Because what kind of future would you have in Topeka? Would you have stayed? Like, would you see that? Like, what's that going to be?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, a lot of my friends that I grew up with have stayed in Topeka, and my older sister's still there and stuff. You know, I grew up on sports. We were doing a lot of sports, and so we traveled a lot. We spent most of our summers, Kirsten and I spent most of our summers in the car with our mom traveling around going to track meets. So I was traveling all the time. So I had all these places in my head that I thought I could live, you know?
Right, right, right.
So I was always kind of daydreaming about other places. very specifically, I dreamed about the East Coast a lot, because I had family up there. And but I think if I stayed in Topeka, I probably, you know, I don't know. I probably would have maybe taught. I would have been a teacher.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends were teachers, you know, that kind of thing. But I definitely felt that I always felt that I needed to be somewhere else. And it was more of just a feeling. I've always been very close to my instincts and my feelings about, like, I just have a feeling that I need to go to this place today because I'm going to see so-and-so.
Right.
And there's no reason I should think that I should see so-and-so.
Right.
Other than it's just a feeling I had. It's like an intuition. I'm not saying I'm not really that.
Right. Right.
You know, I'm not that person that, you know, that thinks I have some kind of magical power, but I do follow my gut a lot.
Right.
And my gut just said, you know, you're supposed to be somewhere else. And I didn't know where it was, but, I started feeling a pull toward Austin, you know, when I was in college, and I just really felt that I needed to be here.
Had you come here for track meets and stuff?
Yeah, I came for the Texas Relays.
Okay.
So I spent time there, but I really didn't see anything other than the, you know, the track and the hotel and wherever we went to eat. But
right, right.
It just felt, there was just something that felt right about it. So, yeah.
What was your thing in track? What was your, like?
I threw javelin.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a javelin thrower. So I did, I started when I was 13 and I threw in college and I threw a little bit after college. And then one day I was just kind of walking toward where I was going to work out and I just kept walking because it was a beautiful day and I never really looked back.
So when you moved to Austin, when was that?
So I moved here in 97.
Okay.
I moved here in 97 the first time. So I moved here. I had kind of found out that because of track, a lot of my classes I didn't get to take when I needed to. So my school was going to be extended. I was going to have to go longer than I thought. And I couldn't take this one class that I needed to graduate until a whole year later. And it was just a big mess. And so I just kind of decided on a whim to move here because I liked it. And by then I had come down and listened to music quite a bit. And I packed up this, you know, my Bronco 2 that barely worked with with like a crate of books and a couple shoe boxes full of CDs and a duffel bag. And I just drove down here and I didn't know anyone. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a plan. I current me would probably not do that. Maybe plan a little ahead, but it worked.
Who were the people that you saw when you were down here the first time?
Let's see. By that time I had seen Casey play.
Uh-huh.
And, let's see who else I'd seen, like Darden Smith and Jimmy LaFave and
yeah,
all those, you know, songwriter people, Bruce Robinson, that kind of thing. I'd come down. Yeah. So I hadn't really completely jumped into it all yet, but I was definitely checking things out. Patty Griffin, I think I saw her at the Cactus before I moved down here. So, yeah.
All right. So you moved down here and then when did you meet Casey when you saw her or?
Yeah, I met Casey that summer.
Where was she playing? Like when you saw her, like what, I'm trying to think of what era of Casey. Cause there's like,
yeah.
I met street busking Casey. And then like,
oh yeah.
Then Casey. Band Casey, then Atlantic Band Records Casey.
Yeah, this was Casey. I think she had gotten her record deal. And so it was band era Casey.
Right.
I think the first show I saw her play, I'm trying to think. I think it was actually at Antone's with the band.
Okay. Yeah.
Like the Antone's on you know,
the Fifth Street.
Antone's on Fifth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's now a ping pong place.
Oh, good. At least I know where there's a ping pong place now.
Yeah, there's. I always know where the ping pong place is. I always know where the ping pong place is and the bakeries.
Yeah.
I'm your person for that. Yeah.
So it was like Trip Wiggins. Was A&R playing with her?
Yeah. Trip was playing for sure.
Cause wasn't there a George Reef era with her?
There was, but I don't think George was playing with her at that time. I think
I remember going with him to one of her gigs that he had, like going with him to the gig, like he came and picked me up.
Oh, yeah.
And I went with him. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I always think about that, like the 90s was like that to me. Like, I remember, like, you know, you watch Seinfeld and the guy's like, oh, I got to go to the air or I got to go get a thing at the mall for some. Oh, I'll go with you. Like, right. People don't do that anymore.
They don't. And I definitely ended up in a lot of situations like that. You know, like I ended up, running errands with all my friends.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I need to go to the HEB, but I also need to go to, you know, I need to go to South Austin Music and pick up the something on the,
right.
And then the, you know, and then I need to go to Kinko's.
Yeah. Yeah. Kinko's. Oh. I miss those places. You know what
I know. Right?
Sorry. This is one last nostalgic thing I'll say. You know, the Motorblade guy, he's still a guy.
Yeah. He's still a guy.
I was like at an Amy's ice cream there, huh? And the thing is there and you're like, shit. And it's like put up by Motorblade. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
He's still doing
that
it.
That is crazy. That he's been at it for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. And you think like it's just a matter of time before that job becomes extinct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would think. But so, yeah, I mean,
what were you doing? Like, okay, so you move here and then like you found a place. Where'd you live?
I lived off of Riverside. Well, actually it's between Riverside and Old Torf over there on Willow Creek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I live on Riverside now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I lived over there. I remember I found it. It was like a studio apartment for $370 a month.
Jesus.
And I thought that was really expensive.
What kind of job did you start doing?
Well, I had a job. It was at a wholesale florist, a wholesale floral warehouse. So they sold little, you know, things to put in floral designs and such, you know, like little figurines and, you know, I don't know. All kinds of stuff. It was a warehouse where florists came to buy things to make floral arrangements. And I had that job. And then I was out jogging on the hike and bike, and I went wandering around and I walked up to, was it 2nd Street? And I noticed the sign on the door said something about Austin Music Network. And I was basically on a break from school. I needed to go back and finish and graduate. And I thought, oh, I need an internship. And so I just walked in there in my jogging clothes. I walk in and I'm like, hi, I'd like an internship. And they sent me down to the basement to watch tapes and make sure that there was no cussing or that there weren't any breaks in the tape or, I can't remember what else it was, just to make sure there was no.
Was it Tim Hamblin?
He was there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim Hamblin was there. And, yeah.
Tara Benarusso. Yeah. Did Tara Benarusso and Margaret Mosher had a show?
I think so. I was there. I was only there for really, you know, several months, but,
okay.
But yeah, I spent most of my time in the basement sorting tapes and watching tapes.
Is that like when it was in City Hall or whatever?
Yeah.
I thought that whole thing wasn't it all a basement?
Yeah, it was there. They had some offices upstairs too, but then there was like this back room and it was just, you know, I remember a lot of the places where they had the stuff set up for recording was just on the other side of a wall of tapes that I was trying to organize. And I remember, you know,
all right,
trying to do my job very quietly, you know,
right.
But it's those were fun times though. Cause I mean, I got to watch all these tapes. I got to watch all these live performances by people and it was such a wide range of artists and, you know.
That's so cool, Chris.
Yeah, it was super cool. I loved it. But
so then you also were friends with Mark and Nina. How did you meet them?
Yeah, I met them through Robin who worked at AMN at the time. Robin Solomon?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, she was my booking agent in the 90s.
Yeah. I met them through her because I don't remember if they were temporarily staying at her house or something. And she was,
no, but
she was like, you got to,
I feel like she booked that whole crowd of people.
Yeah, I think she did. And I remember her saying, you got to see my friends, you know, band play. They're so good. And I went to see them and realized who it was she was telling me to go see was the band that I had heard on the radio and loved.
Oh, wow. The Borrowers.
It was The Borrowers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was when they were playing Beautiful Struggle all the time.
Yeah.
Which was such a good song. And so it was one of those weird moments where it was like, I've been listening to this song for, you know, months. And then this person tells me, oh, you got to see them play.
Right.
And yeah. And that's how we ended up meeting. And then, you know, got to be good. And then later on, that's when I was looking for a place and Nina was like, oh, Mark needs a roommate. And it all went from there. Then I was suddenly living in a studio.
Right, because your room was there.
Yeah, well, so at the first studio, the first farm, remember that big farm way off of Slaughter?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? It was like 72 acres of land and then that house. And so my room was directly above the studio there. So, because they had the studio in the kind of half basement.
Right.
Yeah, and it was like I was upstairs and Dave and Marianne Wiley were across the hall from me.
Right.
In that room. And then when they moved to the other place, when he got his new place out there, then you know, I moved elsewhere, but then eventually I moved into that little travel trailer that was on the land. I think it belonged to Alejandro.
Right.
Or Pat sold it to Alejandro, and or one way or the other.
When they're talking, hold on real quick for the audience. It's Pat McDonald from Timbuk3, the Future So Bright guy, because he had a trailer out on Addison's property. And then Alejandro Escovedo, the legendary singer-songwriter, also had a trailer out. And so you lived in one of their trailers.
I lived in one of their trailers, but not knowing it. It was that era when you're like, I'm living in this trailer, and then all of a sudden you find out who it belongs to. And then you find out that somebody sold it to somebody and it might be taken away at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
That happened.
So it never occurred to you to jam back then at all? Like hanging out? Like-
No. Nina Singh taught me four chords on guitar, and you know, I didn't practice them for years because I'm in a room full of musicians. No one wants to hear me try to go from G to C over and over.
Right.
Let these people do that, you know, like let these people play guitar. So I didn't practice for years. And then then in 2017, when Casey has started doing her like songwriting mentoring thing.
Yep.
And I had somehow ended up with this cheap guitar, and it occurred to me, and I don't know why it occurred to me, but I think part of it was, you know, part of it was wanting to support my friend, and part of it was just like, I have time on my hands. Why not? Why don't I give this a shot? And I still don't understand the whole thought process that got me there. But I said to Casey one day, maybe I'll be one of your clients. And she said, can you sing? I was like, I have no idea.
Wow.
And, and then, yeah. So then like right before she came over to see if I could sing, I remember just kind of like going, okay, I think it looks something like this and something like this. And
wow.
You know, this, yeah. So I kind of learned to do it all at the same time, but yeah.
That's great. I have this feeling of like osmosis had a lot to do with it. Like you weren't just, like you were taking so much in at such a close range and seeing the whole aspect of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny the things that come to me every once in a while. And I realize that I had heard sometime when we're all sitting around playing Scrabble or something, just hearing people talk about stuff and then realizing, you know, when I started writing songs, I was like, oh, I should go to the chorus now.
Right.
Like,
right. Right.
I should
yeah.
Go
yeah.
To the chorus
yeah.
now because it's, you know, I'm looking at how long it is and,
right.
you know, remembering somebody say there's like a specific time when you have to go, you should go to a chorus.
Yeah.
And I think I knew it because of Spencer's band. Right? It's your band. Yeah.
Spencer's band, 54 seconds. So our friend Spencer Gibb had this band. It was called something else before 54 seconds. I can't remember what it was, but I was in it for a little while.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think everybody was at some point.
right.
And so, he went to these labels and this like two different guys were like, oh, listen, man, you got to get to the chorus before 55 seconds. And so that's why he called his band 54 seconds.
It's 54 yeah. seconds. Yeah. Yeah. But for whatever reason that stuck in my head and I'm like, oh wow, this is a really long first verse. I should probably go to a
chorus soon.
Go to a chorus now. Yeah.
Well, I think that's how I like, I came out writing songs in a format that I heard from Tom Petty. Like, whatever template was happening in 1976 to 1982. And, like, the Beatles and the, like, just like, okay, well, this is how you do a song. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there is that sort of thing where you're like, and then you just try and sing what you want to hear. I know that sounds funny, but that's kind of how I do it. Like, I try to do something I would want to listen to.
Yeah, exactly. But there, little things like that I didn't realize I was taking in. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, that's helpful.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Weird little things, you know? So, or...
So on this trajectory that you're on, that's moved really fast. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you, not a lot of people after 4 years put their shit out to get judged. I guess they do now. Things can move a little faster because people have a little more autonomy. But
yeah.
Like what happens now? Like when you play these shows this weekend, which this will come out after you've played these shows, like are these shows going to be with Brian and Pally and Charlie?
Yeah. It's going to be the whole band that is on the record is gonna play with me. Yeah. It's super weird. It was super weird at first when we've played a few shows together. It was super weird, you know, playing and then, you know, looking over and being like, oh yeah, that's Pally's playing, you know, Pally's playing my song.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or Brian's playing my song. This is nutty, you know, and it took a little bit of getting used to and a little bit of, you know, oh, I'm not here to, oh, I have to actually sing now. I'm not here to watch my, you know, my buddies play.
Yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, we're going to play with the band that recorded it. It's going to be fun. I'm excited.
Do you... You're coming into this thing as like the person with the stuff to offer. And then you're playing with all these people that have played like since you were a little kid.
Right.
Is it hard to sort of be like the band leader? Like, hey guys, let's go over this chorus. I'm not really jiving with this thing or I mean, I think I've played with Brian, but I played with Pally a lot. Uh-huh. And you don't really need to tell Pally much.
Yeah. It was intimidating at first. The really cool thing about these guys is that, you know, I obviously respect their experience and where they've been and all of that, but they have never once kind of done the whole thing where, you know, I don't know. I feel a lot of respect from them in that way.
That's cool.
It's super cool. And actually on a couple occasions when I have sort of kind of, you know, been a little doubtful about my own place in it all, they've been really good about saying, hey, just trust yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's important. That's important because it is intimidating playing with people with that much experience, and you've watched the progression, you know, you've watched them for so many years and you've seen what they've done. And so it was intimidating at first, but then I realized that, you know, that they're telling me to trust myself and they're not telling me like what to do.
Right.
They're telling me to trust what I feel.
Right.
And that's important. That's really important. And I just respect them so much for that.
Yeah.
But it is definitely weird sometimes.
So you're having a record release. Did you make CDs or no?
There's CDs. Yeah, there are CDs. I wasn't sure how things go with that, but people seem to want them. So,
yeah.
You know, cause that was, everybody was asking, are you going to make CDs, right? Cause I want a physical thing to hold and you know.
I don't know how much it happens anywhere, but Austin music fans, like that, you know who I'm talking about, like people at the Saxon Pub on Sunday nights for the Resentments, at the thing on the Sunday mornings at El Mercado, at those things Wednesdays at Wero's and stuff like that. Those guys like CDs.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. They like to buy, and I think it's as much about supporting the artist as it is, you know, about wanting the thing.
They have really old fucking computers, you know? Man. That's what they have.
Well, I just got a new to me car because my other one broke down, and I got in and I was like, oh, it has a CD player.
You were excited?
I was excited about it. I was like, a CD player. But
remember when we did painting with Dickie Lee?
Yeah.
I was just actually, I drove out. What did I drive out to? Oh, I drove out to Enchanted Rock. My girlfriend and I took the dog out there. Yeah, so I drove. What was that weird? It was kind of by Pooties, right? That guy's house. We painted. We stained this guy's. Remember this. Yeah, and he was a really nice guy. But then one day he just came out and said the most racist thing, like just kind of as like a sweet guy thing. Like, do you not remember that?
Oh, I don't remember that. Was I there?
It was awful.
Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Oh God. Man.
That was like the oddest crew of people. It was like all these like misfit musicians run by this other misfit musician. And you, but you were part of that crew anyway. You know what I mean?
I was the only, And it was, I remember, there was the guy, Chris, and then there was.
Right, Chris Midas, the bass player. Yeah.
Chris Midas, yeah. And then there was me, Chris. And I remember you guys not wanting to call me Chris S because that sounded like we were in, you know, third grade.
Right.
And then you were like, but we can't call you Chris 2 because that's demeaning. So we're going to call you Chris as well.
As well. That's right.
It became as well. And so Dickie Lee would be like, now as well, you know? And I was as well. And actually Russell Beach.
Oh yeah. Russell.
You know, when I ran into him years later, he's like, as well.
Yeah. And then we worked with Thor at the same place that I did therapy. That was the place we were like tearing apart.
Yeah.
There's nothing more therapeutic than being in the room that you've cried in with your therapist, like ripping the fucking walls out. You know what I mean? And that's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. That's so funny.
And so
I remember that so well.
Did you start working? Did you start working at that vet next door to that place?
I did. Yeah.
I remember that.
They hired me basically from, because we were remodeling.
Right.
So it was the vet owned both buildings. And so we were remodeling this house for the vet clinic to be like their operating room and x-ray place and all that. And we were just remodeling. It felt like a year that we were remodeling that place. And from this like remodeling gig, I they somehow hired me as, you know, as the person who,
yeah.
you know, yeah, at the vet clinic. Yeah.
And is that how you ease your way into dog walking and stuff?
Sort of, maybe. I did that for a while, and then what did I do? Oh yeah, I did that for a while, and then I actually ended up getting so I was selling merch for Future Clouds and Radar.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was selling merch for them, and then they asked me to go on this like month long tour with them to sell merch, and then they lost their road manager, and so by default I became the road manager for this month-long tour of, you know, the Midwest and Canada and the Northeast. So I stopped working at the vet clinic and did that. And then when I got back from there, I got a job at a dog daycare, and then just branched out on my own. After that, I realized, oh yeah, I want to be working with the dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, I mean, I know this is about music and stuff, but there was one day that my former dogs, Taylor and Dylan, you would walk them sometimes, they loved you so much. And I noticed it one day when I was walking them and I was listening to something on my headphones, and they both just pulled back and like almost pulled my arms out. They were such big dogs.
Oh,
I turned around and they were seeing you, and they were like screaming like, ah! It was awesome.
I remember that. I remember that. Oh, they were the best. I love those two.
Yeah.
Such good dogs. Yeah.
Einar's dog, Boba, and Rosie, my dog, they get down, dude. Like they're around the same age. Yeah. They play the same. Yeah. They're about the same size. So are you going to do more band shows after this?
I'm hoping to, yeah. I don't have anything on the books yet, but I'm really hoping to. So I love playing in general, but I just love playing with the band so much.
Right.
It's just so much fun. So,
Do you already have plans for like what you're like, okay, I made this album? Because I know there's this feeling like for me, it's like as I'm finishing an album, I start fantasizing about the next album, mostly because I'm really burnt out about this album and I need something to look forward to. Yeah.
Right. Well, actually, because we had that big, you know, that big space in between starting that record and ending that record, I wrote a whole album's worth of songs in the space between, you know, March of 2020 and when we got back in the studio to finish the album. So I have a bunch of, you know, I have a good amount of material that is ready. And Charlie and I keep laughing because we're like, he's like, on the next record, you know, and he's like, wait, we got to finish this one first. So I'm looking forward to that. We kind of already have some plans for that. So,
So what, you're going to do solo shows then for like in November and stuff? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. I'm going to do some solo shows and stuff. Yeah.
If people can find you at chrisschultzmusic.com. That's where your thing is. The album's called Standard Issue Heart. By the time this comes out, it'll be out already. So it's going to be on all the streaming things?
It's going to be on all the streaming things, and it will also be on my website.
Okay.
And
you can buy CDs.
And actually the CDs are actually on the Texas wall at Waterloo Records right now.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
They're over there. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're in the bins with the rest of us.
I'm in there. I actually even have my own little plastic divider thing with my name, and they spelled it right. They spelled my name right.
Who are you by?
I was pretty excited about it. I am by Carl Schultz.
Okay. I think that I'm in between Gowdy and Ellie Goulding. Like I'm in between my own band.
Yeah, there you go. And gotcha.
Or at least I was, if those Gowdy things are still even in the bins.
Yeah.
At some point they run out.
I was kind of looking, actually, if you're looking at mine, where they spelled it right. I'm just so overwhelmed that they spelled it right, because no one ever spells my last name right. But because it has all the consonants.
S-C-H?
But it, U-L-T. S-C-H-U-L-T-Z.
Yeah.
Yeah. But everybody always leaves one of those out, which makes sense because there's really too many. But anyway, so if you're looking at mine and you turn around, then Ricky Lee Jones is across.
Oh,
is across the way. That's pretty exciting. Good.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Yeah. She's one of my favorites. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I geeked out about that. I'm letting myself geek out about as much as I want to geek out.
Yeah, you know? Of course,
it took me
man.
So long to get to find this thing that I love. I'm just letting myself, you know, do it.
We all still geek out.
Yeah,
you know, I get excited when something happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not that like, you know what I mean?
Not
removed from my, yeah. Removed from what I came here for. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
Well, welcome. Welcome to the world of, of judgment now. Now that you put out a record.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Well, you did. You guys all did Yeah, you guys all did a really great job, and your songs are incredible.
Yes, thank
like
you.
You really,
thank you.
It was really, it was great to listen to this record. And Charlie did a great job, and Brian and Pally just really, they brought a lot of class to the table.
Yeah,
they
do.
Well, I hope you have great shows this weekend. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you.
As I said, can find you at chrisschultzmusic.com. The album's called Standard Issue Heart. Do you prefer that they stream or buy it, or what's your feeling?
You know, I'd love it if they bought it. but I just hope people listen, you know.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I'm just happy any way that it gets to people, I'm happy with. And I just want to connect with people, so.
Good.
That's however that happens, I'm there.
Well, Passing Through, I think, is my favorite song.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was...
Thanks.
I thought it was haunting, and yeah. All right. Thank you so much for doing the show. And
thank you.
And it is it's great having you on. It's great talking to you. We need to get together. You need to meet Rosie.
I know. Yeah. I need to meet Rosie so badly. She's so cute. I can't wait to like see those little her
eyebrows,
little face markings, and yeah, her little eyebrows. And
dude, can I tell you something she did today?
Sure.
I put her in her kennel because I was going to the grocery store, and when I was leaving to close the door, you know those dogs? There's like one specific dog in the Sarah McLachlan commercial. That's like all pushed up against like the grate of the metal, and is like
right,
with the
right.
saddest
Super
eyes,
sad.
Like Rosie. Yeah. That's what she was doing. It was so funny. I started singing Baby. In the arms of an angel. All right, Chris. Well, I love you, and I'm very proud of you.
I love you.
And
thank you.
And I know a lot of other people. One more thing. Have you heard back? Like, what does Casey think?
I haven't heard from her yet, but I've heard from other people.
Good.
So,
well,
yeah.
Everyone should be pretty fucking proud of this, because this is, you should be very proud of this.
Thank you. Thank
you. Guys did a great job.
Thank you so much.
Have great shows this weekend.
Thank you.
Bye. Held us captive all those nights. That's Chris Schultz. Her new album, Standard Issue Heart, her debut album, available now wherever it is you stream and download your music. Go to chrisschultzmusic.com for all of your Chris Schultz needs. She is playing tonight, Friday night, November 19th at Front Yard Brewing in Spicewood from 5 to 7. Tomorrow night, Saturday, November 20th, The Cigar Vault in Buda from 7:30 to 9:30. Great, great, great talking to Chris. I hope you guys all have a great weekend, whatever it is you do this weekend. And don't forget, when you're out there, checking out chrisschultzmusic.com for all your Chris Schultz needs. Check out How Did I Get Here, wherever it is you stream and download your podcasts. And follow us, leave us a like, leave us a rating, comment, share. If you're a Chris Schultz fan, share this with all your friends on the Insta. I'm at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram. Everyone have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.
Glad no one told me we're adding up someday. But I can't go back to show myself the way I had to fall. I had to break. I had to find every scrap to make. Every inch of this road that brought me here, so the truth could appear. Nothing was ever quite what it seemed. Those crumbling walls never held our dreams. Someone was always crying in the hall, where all the paper peeled off the walls, and your shadow always sneaking out the door. There had to be more. Someday, glad I can't go back to show myself the way I had to fall, I had to break, I had to find every scrap to make, every inch of this road that brought me. Me.